Konnichiwa, and welcome to Japan Edge for all things Japan. This channel brings you the latest insights and stories straight from the heart of Tokyo. Here, I'll be diving into what's happening in Japan right now, exploring the trends, uncovering the stories behind them, all from the perspective of locals. This podcast is intended for those of you interested in Japan but don't know much about the country, or for those of you looking for insights beyond what the guidebooks would offer you. I'll be sharing with you some of the topics that the local Japanese are tuning into usually, and we'll also give you my personal take on some of our cultural aspects. So, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Since this is my very first episode, I want to start off by giving you just a brief introduction of myself. I am a Japanese born in Tokyo. I went to school here, but I spent several years in the US and in Europe in my childhood because of my father's job. Then worked in New York after college, went to grad school in California. And then worked for a couple of international firms in New York and London. But I've settled down here in Tokyo since about 10 years ago and have been here since then. So the point is, the blend of my Japanese heritage and international exposure will hopefully give you insights into Japan from both native and outsider perspectives. Another thing I should offer a disclaimer up front, and that is, although I will try to give you a balanced view of Japan, my perspectives are rooted in my Tokyo upbringing. So my observations and opinions may sometimes differ from those living in rural areas or other cities of Japan. So I just wanted to lay this out to you up front. Okay, so having said that, let's get things going. Since I've started talking about me being from Tokyo, I thought I would talk about the regional diversity of Japan today. Japan is actually a quite diverse country, some with unique dialects, many with their unique local cuisines, habits, and practices. You might know that there are 47 of what we call prefectures, kind of like states in the U.S., each with its capital city. The prefectures don't have the kind of political or legal autonomy or authority like in the U.S., but there is a prefectural assembly, kind of like the Congress, and there are prefectural elections. Local public administration is done on a prefectural level, and local public schools are under prefectural jurisdiction, and so on. But again, the level of autonomy is nothing like what the states have in the U.S. Now, the prefectures are categorized into 8 regions. For example, the Kanto region is the most famous one, and it consists of 7 prefectures, the most famous one being Tokyo. There's also Kanagawa, Saitama, Chiba, Ibaraki, Tochigi, and Gunma, all 7 in what we call the Kanto region. Well, you probably have not heard of anywhere except for Tokyo and maybe Kanagawa, where the city of Yokohama is. But that's okay, because even many Japanese are totally unfamiliar with these other prefectures, to be perfectly honest with you. Ibaraki, Tochigi, and Gunma are actually considered to be so remote from everything that these 3 prefectures tend to be bundled together as the quote-unquote unknown area. Now, there's an interesting survey conducted by an institute called the Brand Research Institute, and they do a nationwide survey on which prefecture you think is the most attractive. This survey is quite famous, and the result is picked up by various TV programs and also announced in the news. The survey questions people from the age of 20 to 70, sampling out the people across the nation to get a fair representation of the country. And they do this every year. Now, last year, 2023, Ibaraki was unfortunately ranked the lowest, number 47th. Saitama was ranked 45th, and Gunma 44th, Tochigi 39th. So, I guess you can say that although these prefectures are very close to Tokyo, which is really the center of Japan, they are the least known and unfortunately least popular within Japan, unfortunately. But having said this, I do want to point out that Nikko, for example, one of the famous tourist cities with its fabulous hot spring, the onsen, and the shrine built by Tokugawa Ieyasu, well, that's located in Tochigi. So Tochigi, in my mind, should be viewed a little bit differently than the other low-ranking prefectures. In that regard, Gunma also has a famous onsen as well, the Kusatsu. So I guess the perception of these places might be different between the tourists and the Japanese. Because if you're trying to figure out where to go when you come to Japan, most likely than not, you will encounter travel guides that recommend you to go to places like Nikko and Kusatsu as great onsen places. Well, what's funny is that these low-ranking prefecture locals tend to mock and be sarcastic about themselves. And there's an open, kind of friendly competition amongst these prefectures. And this is very funny because these prefectures look almost identical to everyone except for the people living there. And there's, in fact, a famous TV show called The Secret Kenminsho, meaning The Secrets of the Locals, which introduces various unique cultures and practices of various cultures based on the prefectures. And the comparison between the low-ranking prefectures has kind of become a popular trademark story, repeated many times with different angles. This TV show would run videos of the local people commenting on what they think are great about their prefecture and how great they are compared to their neighboring regions. So the Ibaraki people would often say that they are close to the beautiful ocean, the Pacific Ocean, and so their seafood is great, but that Gunma doesn't have anything except for the rice fields and mountains. But of course, Gunma people would say otherwise, that they have the famous hot spring tourist places, and therefore a ton of people actually make a visit there, while there is not a single touristy site in Ibaraki. So a prefectural competition is actually quite common, and it's even a typical conversation to get acquainted with each other. To start off a conversation with someone you're not familiar with, it's common to ask which prefecture he or she is from. And if you say that you're from this prefecture, the conversation would be like, oh, if that's the case, then do you guys actually do this or that? You know, so again, prefecture is something that people like to talk about. Now, this TV program that I'm talking about started in 2007. So we are now in its 17th year, and it has continued to be one of the very few long-lasting popular TV programs. So this in itself shows just how much we Japanese love to talk about the diversity of our country. And we enjoy the stereotypes associated with our own regional cultures, and locals laugh at the cliches about their own hometown, and we engage in friendly competitions with neighboring regions, boasting about who's got the best of this or that. And prefectures' uniqueness is also very much reflected in the cuisines, and this is also very interesting. You might have an image of what Japanese food would look like or taste like. But in fact, Japanese food is extremely diverse, depending on the region. So one of the most joyful things about actually coming to Japan is that you get to taste the differences of the regional cuisines. Just as an example, I don't know if you've ever tried miso soup, but even a simple miso soup could taste very different depending on the locale. Miso soup from up north tend to be stronger and salty than the miso soup served in the west or in the south. And you can see the difference even just by looking at them, because the miso soup used, the miso used in the northern part of Japan are often dark brown as opposed to miso used in, for example, Kyoto. So we call the northern miso red miso and the Kyoto type miso white miso. They taste completely different. Well, there are actually many variations of miso apart from these two. So if you have a chance to go to a Japanese restaurant near your home, you could ask the chef whether they're using miso from a specific region or not. That might be an interesting additional information for you. So I do hope that you have an opportunity to come to Japan and spend some time in various locations. It would be great if you could visit the northern part, like Aomori or Fukushima, and also the western areas like Kyoto and Osaka. I'm quite sure that you will enjoy the diversity of this country. Okay, now, one place that is considered to be one of the unique cities, if not the most unique, is Osaka for sure. Osaka stands out in so many ways. It's best known as the city of great sense of humor and unique Osaka dialect. Osakans are often described as very assertive and extremely funny. And laughter is not just a form of entertainment, but a way of life. The conversation among the Osakans is just so funny because they actually intend themselves to get a laugh. I do have several friends from Osaka, but frankly, I get a bit exhausted after having a dinner with them because my mind swirls throughout the conversation, because first, I need to make sure I say something funny. And second, I need to respond quickly with a sense of humor to what my friends are saying. For the Osaka people, all this comes naturally because it's literally in their blood to present themselves with a sense of humor. But for others, being in Osaka or being with the Osaka people could sometimes be a challenge. As a matter of fact, it is often said that when a family from Tokyo moves to Osaka, the entire family tends to have a hard time getting used to living there. The choice of words, the demeanor, everything is different in Osaka. And so when you travel to Osaka, you will most likely be able to detect a clear difference, even when you go to a restaurant, for example. In Osaka, everyone speaks bluntly. That is, in a good way, of course. And the customers and the waiters, or the waitresses, talk as if they've known each other for years. Very frank, very open, very straightforward. A very unfamiliar sight for people like me from Tokyo. So why is the Osaka culture so different? Well, the answer is in its history. Osaka has always been the commercial heart of Japan, a thriving city with predominantly merchants living there. It saw its prominence shift when the capital moved to Edo, which is now the Tokyo, with the start of the Edo period in the early 1600s. However, Osaka didn't lose its spark, and it continued to thrive as a cultural and commercial hub of the West. And their culture that cherishes wit and humor remained strong. Since the city was full of merchants, the atmosphere was always dynamic and being straightforward or aggressive sometimes was essential for negotiating deals. That was their way of living. Now, the Osaka dialect added to the city's uniqueness for sure. The dialect does sound a bit strong if you're not used to hearing them, and it does sound more comical, more humorous than the standard Japanese. In fact, many comedians across Japan adopt the Osaka dialect to inject humor into their acts. Many comedians are actually from the Osaka area, but even the ones originally from other parts of Japan would often use the Osaka dialect because the dialect alone could easily make them sound funnier. Osaka, by the way, is part of the Kinki region. Remember, I told you that there are 8 regions in Japan, and Kinki is a region where Osaka is, together with several other prefectures, namely Kyoto, Nara, Hyogo, Mie, Shiga, and Wakayama. Now, people outside of Kinki tend to lump these prefectures together, but the reality is quite different. Each of these prefectures sees itself as distinctly unique from the others. Take Kyoto, for example. Kyoto takes great pride in their own heritage and culture as the original center of Japan, where the emperor long lived and where the Japanese culture was born. And they frankly wouldn't appreciate being compared to their neighbors in Osaka. In fact, many of them will try to make a case that they are nothing like the locals of Osaka. One famous cliche about people of Kyoto, by the way, is that they tend to be very indirect in what they say. I think it comes from the culture of wabi-sabi, meaning emphasis on modesty and humility, and that being direct is considered rude. But that gets translated into them saying one thing but mean something completely different. So you really have to be careful and read each other's mind. So already you're seeing the total opposites within the Kinki region, Osaka being the center of utmost straightforwardness, and Kyoto being the champion of subtlety. And the two cities are only about 40 minutes away by train. So here's the complexity and diversity, even within this small region of Kinki. Let me give you a funny example that is often mentioned when we talk about Kyoto. Let's say you're invited for tea at your friend's house, and you're having a good time with your friend, relaxing. Then your friend asks you whether you would like to have another cup of tea. Now, question, what is considered to be the right response? Should you say, oh, thank you, politely, and wait for the tea to be served? I mean, you were offered for another cup, right? Well, the answer is no. That tea offer was actually an indirect way of saying you've been here long enough. Enough so that the tea is already gone. So the correct response would be, oh, whoops, I've been here for too long. Geez, I had such a great time. I better get going. Thank you so much for the tea. Okay, I mean, how are you supposed to know this, right? The Kyoto communication is said to be a bit mysterious, difficult even for Japanese, unless you're from Kyoto, or unless you are familiar with this kind of a cultural habit. I actually do have a friend from Kyoto, born and raised pure Kyoto person. And I admit, I do get nervous talking to him sometimes because I feel like I have to read into his mind and figure out whether he means what he's saying or whether I'm supposed to be reading into what he's saying. Now, you would not have to worry because anything goes with the visitors. You are not expected to know these cultural subtleties or details. We Japanese, on the other hand, would be subject to scrutiny for sure. So I actually feel sorry for the Japanese who were born outside of Japan or Japanese who've spent a great deal of time outside of Japan, because the subtle nuances are not something that are taught in school. It's something that you pick up in life. So I do hope that you'll have a chance to visit various places if you ever have an opportunity to come to Japan. Getting to know our regional diversity, I'm sure, would be very interesting to you. I wish I had more time to introduce you to the uniqueness and wonders of various regions of Japan. I'm thinking of doing another episode just on the different food of the regions, so I hope you'll stay tuned to this channel. And before I end today's episode, remember I mentioned the least favorite prefectures at the beginning of this program? Well, can you guess which were the top five prefectures that were considered the most attractive, according to this national survey? Well, number one was Hokkaido. Yes, beautiful nature, great dairy food, great seafood, great everything, actually. It is a very popular vacation place even for Japanese, and Sapporo, the capital city of Hokkaido, is considered to be a nice place to live. Well, that is, if you don't mind the cold weather. If you're into nature activities, Hokkaido would be a good place for you to travel. Second place was Kyoto. Okay, well, everybody is in love with Kyoto's beautiful scenery. So that makes sense. By the way, Kyoto is known for great cherry blossom as well. So late March is one of the great times of the year to go there. Okay, now third place was Okinawa. Okay, fourth, Tokyo, and fifth, Osaka. So these top five prefectures all have tourist attractions, and they are all considered by many Japanese to be nice places to live in general. So I guess I agree with this outcome. No surprise. I hope you'll have opportunities to check them out yourselves one day soon. I hope you had fun listening to Japan Edge. Stay tuned for more episodes. And also check out the Japan Edge Instagram, which I just started. I'll be uploading short videos and photos to give you various aspects of Japan. It should be fun. So for now, matane. Matane meaning see you soon. So matane, sayonara.